Let me know when we're recording. Well, there we go. So thanks everybody for getting on. We have Megan Scarlett here from Overtone, who crushed it in Croatia, and a lot of people missed that and wanted to hear it again, and kind of begged her to come on, and she's going to talk about the direct-to-consumer model. You probably know her bio, but she's kind of built a nine-figure valued company kind of out of her garage with no funding, and learned, and she gave one speech about all her mistakes. So this time she's going to just explain direct to consumer what she's learned. And I think a lot of us are already in it. Some people are moving that direction, but we can all get better and better. And what she's done with a lot of us Avid is really focus on business modeling and also some myths that people follow there. And then the psychographic profiling. And I've just been badgering her for the last 10 minutes. So she has a lot of cool stuff to share. And if you have a question, post it, but do it to attendees and panelists so we don't have to repeat your question. So if you have a question on here, do it to both, or Natalie will kill you or remind you to do that. And so ask questions along the way. And Megan, thank you.
Awesome, thanks. Yeah, so I'm gonna mostly spend this presentation talking about some really simple things. I don't think I'm gonna say anything today that's new to anyone, but I've had a lot of follow-up calls with some of you guys after Croatia, and some of what I was telling Michael, some of the interesting things I learned is that some of the most fundamental pieces are what people miss. And when we think about business and revenue and conversion through digital marketing being kind of a funnel, you know, at the biggest part, if you're missing a really fundamental piece and you're cutting your funnel in half, you just end up with a trickle at the end. So we're trying to make sure that the foundation of this is really strong. And a lot of these pieces are things that kind of go against the grain. I think I said in Croatia a couple of times, most everything that I have done to build this business is considered wrong by traditional standards. I haven't gone with any like typical methods. I haven't raised any money. I make sure that even at the very beginning, we were profitable on a single unit of sales. I don't believe in having to scale up to become profitable. I don't believe in digital marketing against lifetime value. I believe in being profitable on the first sale with the first purchase, and significantly profitable to the point where your business has enough cash flow to bankroll itself, pay for a significant amount of inventory, and also make a lot of room for you to fuck up, because everybody makes mistakes like along the way. And the best fix for a mistake or when you are stuck in a hard place is to have cash on hand. So those are kind of my fundamental beliefs about business. And we're going to run through sort of how I have built my model to be scalable and sort of foolproof. And then we're also going to get into the basics of the way that I think about digital marketing. And some of that will be consumer persona based. Some of that will be about kind of how we convert people and how we create a frictionless experience to convert as many people as possible and create an experience for them that's really seamless and easy. So can I share my screen through this? Is that possible?
Yeah.
I made a slide deck for you guys. And I tell you what, the last time I made a slide deck was the last time I did a presentation for you guys.
Natalie, can you see it now, or do you need to be given the host?
Let me see. Oh, I've got a share screen here. Yep. Okay. I will share this guy. Super.
Yes. That's how to make money.
Yeah, I renamed it. So, okay, I think we'll figure this out. Super. All right, so I renamed this because that's really what I ended up wanting to talk about is I want everyone to walk away from this and say, like, this is the simplest shit, because simple shit is where we get overloaded, where things get forgotten, and where we mess up the most. And if, like I said, if we leave holes in the fundamental stuff, we end up with problems down the line. So anyway, that's the thing. Ooh, it's got transitions. Okay. All right. One of my favorite quotes ever is by Nolan Bushnell, and this guy created both Atari and Chuck E. Cheese. Weird guy, if you ever get a chance to read his story. Basically, I'm starting from the priority that money is the goal here. I know that money is not everyone's primary goal, but just so everyone's clear, like, the perspective of my presentation here is that money is the number one goal, with the number two goal being time. So the most money with the least effort and least time. If you have other goals that are in there, just don't hate me for slanting it that way. That's how this is written. Okay, so we start here, and this is like just basic direct-to-consumer supply and demand. And I think it's worth mentioning that really all we're doing is bridging this gap almost any product business is just a supply chain and consumer demand and connecting the two of those things. So I think simplicity is very important. Realizing that all we're doing is connecting like supply chain and demand is really useful. So we're just showing up and solving this problem right in between here. And really the key to this really simple sales product process, I guess, is having product market fit that supports really strong profits. So I said this earlier, we need to have room for mistake in the profit margin. So in between these things, we need to build a business that can scale without having to borrow or raise money. You can borrow and raise money if you want to, but I always want to have cash on hand. The way that we have, you know, the circumstances that are in place right now are a good representation of this. Overtone, for example, right now has a ton of supply chain issues. We've seen demand go up really high. It broke our supply chain. We're having to make up for that. We're doing that through a couple of ways. We are bringing on more production capacity through vendors. We are paying people to speed up our capacity, and we are paying triple what we were before because we want to make sure that we have triple the supply chain so that if anything falls through, we don't end up not being able to capitalize on this demand. There's absolutely no way that I would be able to do that if I hadn't built a business model that had a really strong profit margin, because I wouldn't have the cash to do it. Even with, you know, we have lines of credit. Even maximizing our lines of credit, I would have to go out and get more money right now, which is going to be really difficult. You're going to get it at a bad rate. You always want to be, I think, prepared for the worst situations. This is an extreme example. There have been plenty of other times where I've been able to fix a problem by paying for faster shipping or increasing our redundancy in a particular area of the business by putting, like, just throwing cash at it. And if you're capable of doing that, you can fix so many problems in your business. I've built businesses with small margins, and I've built businesses with big margins, and guess which one I'm doing now? I'm with a big margin. Okay, so I'm gonna throw up like a very basic explanation of a P&L. I know you guys already know how to read a P&L, but for the sake of argument, what I'm throwing up here is just an example of like how we can solve business issues with cash by making sure that the business model supports that. So basic P&L representation, this is just where our supply and demand live, right? Revenue top line is our product demand minus cost of goods, which is effectively our supply chain. And then beyond that, all of your overheads are going to come out and you're left with net profit. A big part of your overhead is going to be digital marketing. So you guys are probably all involved in some degree of digital marketing. I doubt anyone here has 100% inbound marketing right now. One of the biggest points of the way that I try to organize this is make sure that I have a really healthy margin for digital marketing. Like I said earlier, one of the biggest things that I see people mess up on this just basic P&L situation, how to build out net profits, is not having enough room for a strong edge on digital marketing. If you can afford to acquire your consumer at a price that is profitable on the first purchase every single time, your business will throw off cash. Now, I know that this sounds really oversimplified, and it is. I know that most people are probably looking at this and saying like, Megan, I can't just do this, or I can't just this. You can. Everybody can. I've had businesses that have had smaller profit margins that I've had to either pivot, add new SKUs, or just decide to let that business shut or run on its own, have it be a cash cow and build something else. There are a million ways that you can change your business or create a new business to support this. Yeah. My main point here is that if you decide to push forward with a low net margin business, you are always going to be pushing against a rock. You're going to be pushing a rock up a hill all the time. So this is like the most fundamental shit, but it's the most important, because if you look at your business and you say, oh, we have all these problems, I can't afford to do this, I can't scale. The core problem really is that you do not have either enough demand, a reasonably priced supply chain, or enough gross profit that you can afford a reasonable digital marketing cost to acquire those consumers at a profit.
Yeah, let me just all clarify too. I mean, people with products, they always come to me and they're always amazed that most of the cost is your marketing, not the cost of your product. Your cost of marketing is way higher than your cost of your product. And that's where people get weird. And then if you do have like I'm from the supplement business, right? So let's say you have a bar, you know, you might be able to get away at 3-to-1, but you need 6-to-7-to-1. So your cost is marketing, not your product, right? And if you don't have a product, so then if you do have a low margin product, you need a high margin product in the front end to sell the low margin.
Yes. Right?
So 101 stuff, because people come into their businesses like, that won't fucking work, man. Like,
it won't.
Some products are non-starters.
You're pushing a boulder up a hill the whole time. Yeah. If you are dead set on a business that has a low margin, there's a lot of things you can do. You can change the way consumers think about your product. You can change the way you're positioning value. You can increase your prices to support, you can support an increase in price with those things. You can introduce new SKUs that are easier to sell at a higher profit margin. But whatever you do, there's absolutely, in my opinion, no point in pushing forward with a business that does not have this most basic equation sorted out in a way that throws cash off.
On the front end.
Absolutely, on the front end.
You need a high margin product for customer acquisition. You can have low margin on the back end because you've already paid to acquire them.
Yeah, exactly. Your lifetime value can run off whatever. I don't even care about lifetime value. My marketing team tracks it. But frankly, I don't give a shit and I never paid attention to it until about 6 months ago because it didn't matter. We are profitable on the first order always. And especially in beauty, there are a lot of other industries like this too. I get beauty people from industry all the time that are like, this is amazing. How did this happen? How did you create this? How I created it was on purpose. It's not that difficult if you look at the fundamental just foundation of the business and making sure that it functions and works. Like, don't get so blinded by all the shiny, pretty stuff of like, people love to get into complicated tactics. And like, if I figure this out, the reality is if you have product market fit, if you have a demographic that you figured out, people are willing to pay you the price you're charging. And there's ways around that too. There's ways you can educate a consumer base, like I said, but if you have a group of people who are willing to pay you for your product and you have a highly profitable cost of goods versus demand that you can fit that digital marketing budget in there, you're golden. You don't, I mean, sales, what does Mark Cuban say? Sales cure all. That's the reality of the situation.
I completely agree with you on the front end. The lifetime value equation happens like 2 years in, because you're not going to get an accurate lifetime value until you have a track record. Where that comes in is once you know your real lifetime value, that's when you go crush the competition. So that's when you can go, hey, I will go spend more money on all these ads, or I will go to the super publisher and make a deal they can't refuse. That's more to crush people and get your brand out, but it's not your profit vehicle.
And at that point, you've done a significant amount of experimenting. You know who your consumer base is. You know what your strategy is to drive growth in the market. You know where you're pulling market share from. And at that point, you also are in a position, a really good position, especially in a market that's stable. We're a little weird right now. But in a market that's stable, you are in a phenomenal position to go get really cheap money. At that point, you can go raise any kind of money you want because your business is throwing off cash and you don't need it. People love to give you money when you don't need money. And then you can gamble with somebody else's money when it's an educated guess, when people are going to give you cheap money, and then you've proven your concept, right? So so being comfortably profitable is one of the most important things. And a lot of people talk about business as though it's a gamble. I think one of the most important points that I talk about a lot with stuff like this is not a gamble. This is a money-making equation. This is just dollars in, dollars out, and that's it. And if you have that well sorted in your business, you've got 80% of what you need figured out, done. All right, there we go. Okay, so if we're struggling on any part of that basic P&L, there's a few ways where that tends to happen. There's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of like human psychology in this. If you don't already, I highly recommend everybody do a really significant deep dive into human psychology for yourself. I recommend everyone get a really good therapist, do a lot of intentional introspection, get really involved in
everybody
human psychology.
Everybody who can afford a therapist should see a therapist.
Absolutely.
Period.
Understanding your own mind impacts your ability to sell to people on an exponential basis. Understanding yourself gives you such an ability to understand other people, and empathy through consumer behavior is one of the most powerful tools you can have as a visionary strategist to understand how your consumer behaves in and with and through your product. So highly, highly recommend that. So first, if you're looking at the basics of this, you know, of this P&L situation that I wrote out and saying like, this is a struggle, I don't have this, I can't figure this out. I recommend everyone go through this process of asking why 1,000 times to yourself. And this is a really interesting introspective tool that I like in general. This was taught to me by a friend a few years ago. First, ask if you're solving a real problem. So if you're struggling to get people to pay an amount for your product or your service, I suppose, that lets you build a business model that is comfortably profitable. First, ask if you're solving a real problem. And I don't just mean, is there a problem to be solved? I mean, more in a business sense. Are you solving a problem that people are willing to pay your price to fix their problem? If people aren't willing to pay to fix the problem, you're not really solving a problem in a business sense. If the answer to that is yes, then I would encourage everyone to look at where they have issues in their model at a very fundamental level and ask why. What's the problem? And ask why a bunch of times. So this is like, my price is not high enough. Ask why. The why to that may be people won't pay it. Ask why a million times. I mean, just like an incessant toddler until you get to a point where you have something that is either controllable or you're back to question one. So, if you don't have something that is either controllable or a conclusion that says I'm not solving a real problem people are willing to pay for, you haven't hit the core. You haven't hit the core of your issue, because everything other than I'm not solving a real problem people will pay for is controllable. You can change that. If your situation is, you know, I have a product that is heavy and it's really expensive to ship and the shipping costs are getting out of hand. And, Amazon is teaching people to expect free expedited shipping and my consumers aren't willing to pay more for shipping and my shipping is getting really expensive. Okay. That's a reasonable one. You can run through this why equation on that and get to the core of what's causing that. Ultimately, a lot of what you will find at the bottom of these sets of whys is that you need to either introduce a different set of SKUs, you need to change your change the SKUs in your business to the point where you have a higher margin, and or you need to communicate value to your consumers better. I won't get into how to communicate value. That's a whole talk on its own. But if you are, if you need to increase the price of your product, and your consumers won't pay for it. And if you're saying my consumers won't pay for it, I'm assuming you've tested this. Don't just give some bullshit about like, oh, consumers won't pay for this. And really the reality is like the industry sets the standard of X price. That's bullshit. You don't need to compete against price. Nobody who's at like this, don't compete against price. There are various people will argue with me on this. That's fine. Don't ever compete against price. The kind of consumers you get competing against price are garbage. Like I was telling Michael before this, my main consumer comes to our product from a $3 box die. We are taking consumers who are used to spending $3 and getting them to spend between $30 and $60. It can be done. You need to communicate value correctly. So
had something so great and they're charging low. I had them increase the price by actually 80% and the conversion went up.
Yeah, happens.
Because they didn't believe that such a good product would be that cheap. So a lot of times by raising the price, you're raising quality, the perception of quality. So again, test that shit.
Yep, I see that all the time. So if you're saying people won't pay this, make sure you've tested it first. That's not a valid answer if you haven't actually tested it.
You raise the price and change the messaging around it as a exclusive luxury product. So
And like you said, sometimes you don't even have to do that. We've increased our prices before without making any announcement. There was just a ship in the night and we saw conversion rates go up. We've done it twice and we saw conversion rates go up both times because price communicates by itself to people. So there's a number of ways you can communicate value. If you're assuming people won't pay more, don't assume that, okay? The industry that you're in, I said this a couple times at the beginning, don't listen to best practices. Don't listen to the industry that you're in. Do whatever your consumers want. A lot of times, you know, one of my favorite things and the origin of Ford was like, you can, people don't know what they want. If I asked people what they wanted, they would say they want faster horses.
Exactly.
So consumers won't even necessarily tell you, see how they act, right? See how people react to things. Consumers have only been educated to do what they expect. They will set their expectations according to what you give them. Now, there are totally circumstances where you cannot communicate enough value and you legitimately have a problem that consumers want to solve that they will only pay so much to solve, and that's fine. But make sure that you've tested that and don't just assume that because your industry has a $30 price point for X that you can't charge more than $30. You might be able to charge $100 for that same thing if you communicate the value correctly. And then you got a lot of margin to compete.
Now you just told me. So next time you're going to talk about communicating value. So we'll do this one and then you're going to, you're on the hook for that. Because I think that's a big deal.
We'll get into that. Yeah, we can do that next time.
All right. Perfect.
Okay, so these are just examples of things that are not acceptable answers. The end. Don't say that's just the way it is. That's bullshit. Okay, so now from here, we've got this basic figured out, and now we scale our business, right? So now we have a business that is comfortably profitable. We have a set of SKUs that have a high enough gross margin that we can afford a really comfortable amount of digital marketing, and we can also afford for our overhead to grow over time because we need to make room for that as well. So the first thing we're going to do is ruthlessly prioritize what we spend money on. This is a big thing that I see people. My in-house marketing team is so bad at this. This is honestly the number one thing that I still do in my business today, aside from like the main strategic visionary role. I have a CMO who is fantastic, and I have a marketing team under her who are phenomenal, a big one. And they do this wrong every fucking time, okay? I have to sit down with them on a regular basis and say, is this the best place you could spend that dollar? And if yes, how much money does that dollar make back? Marketing and sales are two different frames of thought. In my mind, they need to be one. Marketing has to inform sales. Sales has to inform marketing. They need to be one machine. I do not want to hear from people that this is a brand awareness play. I don't give a fuck about brand awareness unless it makes money. This is a place where a lot of you, when I've gotten on conversations, and phone calls with a lot of you after Croatia, at least three or four of you have had an aha moment when I've been like, do not let somebody tell you this is top of funnel, brand awareness, brand experimentation. Like, you need to experiment with your marketing, but that experiment needs to make money quick or it needs to be cut down.
Lose money.
Brand awareness is the number one name for wasted money that I hear all over the place. So I don't want to hear about elevating the brand. I don't want to hear about spending digital money against lifetime value while we're scaling at this stage. Every single dollar that you spend needs to make a lot of money back. It needs to make enough money that you're saying we could not have spent that dollar any better. Second thing here is that everybody should be measuring the success of their marketing dollars, or really any of their dollars, before they spend them. So this is a really easy trap to get into, and I wasn't good at it at the beginning. I learned this through Overtone. When you start any marketing initiative, any initiative of any kind, when you decide to say go on this audience, go on this channel, go on this piece of software, every single thing needs to have a goal set against a timeline. It needs to be quantified and it needs to make money. So if I have a piece of software that my team comes to me and says, we're buying this software, it's going to help us with consumer data. It's going to really help our AOV long-term. It's going to help us retain consumers. Excellent. Those are all things I care a lot about. You need to put numbers to those and you need to track that and you need to put a date on it so that come October 1 or whatever, you know, if we have 30 initiatives at a time, you especially need this. But even at the beginning, when it's simple, you set a date and you set a set of quantifiable goals, one or more, however many, depending on the initiative. And when you get there, it's a red light, green light. It either worked or it didn't. Because I've seen a number of people, including me, get to 90, 120 days in with a marketing firm or a new strategy on Facebook or a new audience or a new experiment over here. And it's not quite working, but it might start working. And there's this really easy slippery slope to get into where you spend an unreasonable amount of money that you never would have planned to spend at the beginning because you believe in, it's a combo of sunk cost fallacy and this like gambler's fallacy that the next turn is just around the corner. The success is just around the corner. We're gaining on it. We're working on it. That will not happen. I have wasted way too much money on this thing. Measure success before you start. And when you get there, it's red light or green light. It's a binary decision, period.
This is, it's hard to do. It's hard to make people.
It is. But it's easier to do when you start at the beginning. If you get really good in the habit of doing this, it's actually very easy to do. It's very hard to shut off experimental marketing initiatives when you didn't set a goal at the beginning. Because now you say like, is it working? Is it not? It's sort of making money. It's flatlining. We don't know. It might get better next week. We're seeing progress. Like none of that. I am super ruthless about that anymore. I don't tolerate it. I don't care if you say that it's going to be perfect next week. We put a timeline on it. It's gone. That's it. Okay, this is where we get into a little bit of psychographic stuff. We'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk a lot about the basic consumer experience. So every single one of you guys really understands your consumer persona, or hopefully you do. I can talk about that another time as well. As I said, understanding your own psychology is incredibly crucial to understanding the psychology of your consumer. Highly recommend that process. There's also a number of consumer persona experiments online. If you haven't already done them, or if you need a brush up, I highly recommend you go Google that and run through, not even one, go through four or five.
Cool.
And figure out, you know, really sort out your consumer persona. And keep in mind, it is an important thing for a consumer persona. This is your perfect person, and it should be like your most idealized, holy shit. It doesn't need to be someone who encompasses the average of your people, right? It's your perfect person, not your average. So go do that if you haven't already. Everyone here should know their consumer persona better than anyone else in the world, better than your marketing team.
There's so many of those out there. Is there one or two that you recommend?
I'll look and I'll send some links after that. Yeah. Okay. So the reason we need to understand our people is because we need to look at how they're experiencing on an individual basis our digital marketing. This is how we're acquiring consumers. Unless you're selling a coronavirus vaccine, you cannot scale on inbound traffic alone. I doubt that anybody who's here right now or anybody who will watch this is doing any sort of attempt to scale on inbound traffic alone. If you are, good on ya, and we are going to move that, and you're going to make so much more money by shifting into this. So you need to convince people who don't care about you to give a shit about what you're talking about. I don't care. Very, very few people are in a situation where they have a product that people are willing to stop scrolling on Facebook and tune in to their ad the way that someone would if you said, hey, buddy, will you check out my ad? What do you think about this? The way that your marketing team or your friend or any group, like a focus group, I know most people here aren't fucking with focus groups, but like the problem with things like focus groups or asking a friend or asking your marketing team about what they think of your ad and how long they're willing to watch it is that they are intentionally focused on what you are creating. That is not the case with someone who's scrolling through Facebook. They're looking through their friend's puppy pictures, right? They're trying to hit on their ex-girlfriend. Like, this is what people are doing online. You need to have something that is so impactful that somebody is stopping what they're doing in their normal lives and paying attention to your shit. You think you have 10 seconds? That's a fucking joke. You have a fraction of a second to get someone's attention. And then you have maybe 2 or 3 seconds after that to convince them to stay and click to your page. I mean, it's like the tiniest fractions of seconds make the biggest difference. So a lot of what we're going to be talking about here, and this is kind of the last section, is how to reduce friction through your digital marketing experience so that people don't get stuck. Because what we have found, and I know this is true for a lot of brands, it's just true for people in general. You give them one just ounce of friction and they will bounce. And I mean that in a web way, and I mean that in a metaphorical way. They will fucking get out and they are not interested. They don't need you. You need them.
People target me with video. I don't watch fucking video. And if they don't have enough information without the video, I'm gone.
Yep, out. Yep. And you need to know that. If you're your consumer, like, you need to know that this person fucking hates video and will be out in a second. Like, you need to reduce that friction. People will not, you know, a lot of people who create ads really, really get so holed up in their ad that they get really focused on it and believe like, wow, this is so beautiful. It's so stunning. Like, you have 2 seconds. You have 2/10 of a second, and then you get about another 2 seconds. And that's about all you get max. In a video, if you're creating video, or you get, you know, in a photo, it's a little bit different. Another thing, before I move on to the next piece that I'll say is a lot of people forget, when you're exposing your brand to someone who's never seen the brand before, especially people who've already scaled a little bit, miss this. People who have never seen you before don't know what your brand is. It doesn't matter how many people do know what your brand is. New people do not. They've never heard of it. So we think about consumer adoption kind of being on a bell curve, right? So you have like your early adopters, your early-ish, your middle of funnel, kind of like everybody, household name, and then eventually your late adopters, which we probably won't even fuck with ever. But people get, you know, some speed up this curve of consumer adoption, and they have this really nice Instagram presence, and they have all these consumers leaving all these reviews. There's a lot of traffic on the site, and it feels to them, you know, they've got a team, they've got all these people who are regular consumers gaining all this lifetime value, and they forget about the fact that, like, the more you get up this curve, the further you get up this curve, the more people are brand new to you. And you need to treat all of those people like your very earliest adopters. People forget that with their friction as well on your digital marketing efforts. Like, you have more people who probably are less prone to early adopt anything, less prone to understand your product, less prone to learn about it, less prone to like get involved in something they don't understand in the first place. You have an even harder time acquiring those consumers for the first time and explaining your product to them for the first time than your very first consumer, because your very first consumer was an experimental person.
Back to your first point, because your early adopters, like when you came out, it's right for me, they're cheap to get, right?
Yep.
You have profit margin, but as you move up to a wider audience, they're more expensive to get. And so you might have been profitable with your early adopters, but it's a small population. So when you're moving next, if you haven't built that profit margin, then you can't get them.
Yep, exactly. And one of the biggest ways I see people increasing that customer acquisition cost is by forgetting that those people are brand new to you and they're less experimental than your original people. And they're less educated about your market than your original people. These people are harder to convert. Even it doesn't matter how comfortable you feel in your little ecosystem, people who know what your shit is. It doesn't matter how many evangelists you have, your new people will get more and more expensive because they're harder to educate. They're less experimental and they don't know who you are. So you need to make sure that you are creating a really easy, frictionless experience for them and treat them just the same, if not better, than you treated your original person, because they need to understand your stuff and they need to understand it immediately. They don't have 10 seconds. Like, who has ever sat through Facebook and said, I'm going to give this ad 10 seconds of my undivided attention so I can fucking have it. Okay. So here is just kind of the basics of the funnel of digital marketing and how this functions. You guys all know this, but we basically have at the top eyes that exist on the internet. Right now, we have more eyeballs on the internet than we typically do because a lot of people are stuck and bored at home. So eyeballs are a little cheaper than they normally are, but we have eyes on the internet. Following this, the next step is basically that we have eyes on your content. This is someone who stopped given the 0.2 seconds you had their eyeballs and they've decided to spend 2 more seconds with you. Third is clicks on the site, somebody who clicks from your ad in whatever format it comes to your website. And then fourth, obviously, is conversions, which equals money. So here's basically how we reduce friction here. And this is another place where like you have to be so, so ruthless and really dial down, be honest with yourself. It's so easy. People give themselves benevolent lies all the time about their business. Be as ruthlessly honest with yourself and your team as you can. I know that it's like hurt feelings to tell your content team that what they're creating is beautiful, but it's not a salesperson. You know, our videos have to be salespeople first and beautiful second. I know it's difficult to shift and pivot the marketing team when something isn't working and they're tired or whatever. That's part of your job as an entrepreneur, right? So we have to be really, really ruthless about the sections of friction that exist in between these, because like I said, you get 1 second of hesitation. I mean, it can be as much as 1 second of extra load time on the website and you've lost somebody. And you've not lost one person, you've lost 1 out of every 10 or 1 out of every 6. Your conversion rate is plummeting because you have 1 second or even less than 1 second of additional load time. So what we want between eyes on the internet and eyes on your content is more focus. So this transition point, we want more focus on your content. That's where I'm talking about this 0.2 seconds, if not less, that you have to capture someone's attention. Whether it's in a photo or a video, you need to look at your content and say critically, someone who does not care about my product, but is in my demographic and has never heard of me before, do they look at this within 0.5 seconds and say, this is interesting to me? That's really hard to do. That's hard to pull off tactically. It's hard to pull off strategically. And it is the place where most people lose a huge chunk. This is a great example of where the funnel ends up being a trickle at the bottom because people lose something at the very top. So this sounds like really simple shit. And I know that it is, but it's also some of the hardest stuff to do. The more you can get someone to focus on less than 0.5 seconds in on your video, the more successful you'll be convincing them of your product and educating them on what it is. Now, after you've gotten them on that 0.2 seconds, like I said, you have 2, maybe 3 seconds tops.
Stay there in the little crease. So a lot of people use fear because, you know, you hear the whole reptilian brain thing, like snake in the grass, you know, fuck, right? So fear is one way that we all know. What are some other ways? Because basically you're snapping somebody out of their trance, right? Yeah. It's because everybody's in their trance. They're in a Facebook trance, or if they're in Google, then a Google trance, or YouTube is a YouTube trance, right? Mm-hmm. So I know fear works, and that's what I see people doing. What are some other emotions to hit fast for that 0.2 seconds?
That's a great question. It really depends on the consumer persona that you're working with. Sure. But the core piece of that works for any audience is you have to show somebody, not tell them. I see so many people using words or explanations. Anything that matters to your demographic, to your persona, that is something that they can process in 0.2 seconds will function well for you. It'll certainly function better than something that takes them 2 seconds to process. So that reptilian brain is a great example. Anything that someone is capable of processing either with that reptilian or that like very simple mammal brain, don't give them something that's a prefrontal cortex problem to solve that takes 2 to 5 seconds. You need something that shows, not tells. And people think tells is only in words. That's not true. Something that shows you in an instant where you can process the simplest of images, and that image will process into something that is meaningful to your persona. So this depends on who your consumer persona is, who your demographic is. You should know them well. You should understand what matters to them. You should be able to get to the core of why someone gives a shit about your product once they understand what it is, and give them an easily processable example of that that is clearly shown in a very simple way that takes less than a second for their brain to process. Fear is a great example of it. Sometimes,
sex works. It always does.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good one. We see a lot of people in our demographic are really interested in being the coolest member of their group, of their social group. They are often, even now, even further up on our consumer pipeline here, we still have people who for their friend group are early adopters. So they're the most experimental of their friends. That's pretty typical. If we get one friend, we can get all the friends. So the people that we're approaching, this is another important point, I suppose. The people we're approaching on digital media on a first instance, you've never heard of us basis are a particular set of people. They're not our whole demographic. They're the people that we're reaching for the first time. So they are the experimental people in their group. What they want to see is a very quick image that shows them the end result they want, which includes not just my hair is colorful, my hair is pink, my hair is blue, whatever, but also gives off a feeling within that first split second that this person is experimental and socially relevant. Those are two really important things for our consumers. So it's important for you to know for your demographic what matters to them, what their core ego wants, right? And so doing your own like fragile ego work is really impactful here, because if you can know what drives someone else's ego, you can get that 0.2 seconds.
You give them an aspirational self-image.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. There's a book I'm trying to think of the name of that I really love on this that I recommend all the time. Contagious.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Contagious is phenomenal for running through. Contagious has 6 or 7 examples. Every single demographic has included 2 or 3 of those at least, if yeah. not more. And there's 6 or 7 examples of ways that you can get someone's brain really quickly.
Love it. All right. Sorry. Okay. That's important. No, without that, this doesn't matter. That's what yeah. the point is. Without that part, what you're going to now is irrelevant.
Yeah, absolutely. So now you've got eyeballs on your content. You've gotten the 0.2 seconds. Between eyes on your content and clicks to your site, what we want is strong purchase intent. So the important thing here is we want people clicking, but we don't want people clicking without intent to purchase, because that's expensive, right? We pay for each of those clicks. So we want people clicking, but we want them clicking in a way that is well-educated with strong purchase intent. So we know Tom from Viewability had a really great presentation on this a couple of times ago about the number of seconds that you think someone spends on your video is so much less than you think it is. It's so much less. 2 to 3 seconds is about what you get to explain what your product is, how it works, and how to drive purchase intent in a consumer once you've gotten them that 0.2 seconds in. One thing Tom also mentioned is that you would think that people who are more engaged in the video and stay for a longer period of time might have higher purchase intent. They actually don't. So the extent to which you can impact someone's purchase intent very early on in the video, you get a better conversion out of that person. In a 30-second video, someone who clicks in 3 seconds has a much stronger intent to purchase than someone who clicks in 25 seconds. So design your video with the understanding that someone needs to get a grasp on your product, understand why they want it, why they need it, and have very strong purchase intent by the time they are 3-4 seconds, I mean, 5 seconds max into this video. Yeah, because that's what we want when they click.
Can you give Natalie examples after this so we can go through them? Like, mm-hmm. I want to see some of these.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be hard.
So one of the big screw-ups that I see here a lot is people want to create something that is really stunningly beautiful but doesn't get to the point quick enough. That's a really common one. Another one is that people tend to want to trick someone into clicking on their ad. That's very common. And we actually really don't want that. If someone's not going to have strong purchase intent, if they're going to be confused when they get to your website, what's the point? You just paid for a click that's useless. You want someone to understand. You want to create an understanding of value, even if you're not specifically saying the price anywhere on your ad. So someone doesn't show up and say, this is 3 times the price I expected it to be. You want to create an expectation of price, an expectation of value, and an understanding of what the product is, why they want it, and what it does within the first few seconds. That is incredibly difficult for a content creator to do. I'm not a creative person myself, and I don't create content. I have an excellent videographer who does a phenomenal job at this, but every single time, I mean, she's tired of hearing me say it, your video has to be a salesperson and a quick one. It needs to sell something to our people.
What about people who aren't doing video? What about copy or ads? Can you do that in 3 seconds too? It seems like it'd be hard to show a purchase intent.
I think copy's really hard. I think you have to get someone really intent on reading the copy. No one ever, I mean, how many people are reading the full copy? I think virtually no one. I think your main line, your most obvious line, depending on the channel that you're on for Facebook, it's like the one in bold by the call to action. Instagram's the same, depending on the format that you're in, it'll be different. But the most obvious, the biggest, the boldest, and or the first line of copy can be really impactful. Creating long form copy works in some demographics in some instances, but those are more one-offs. If you're selling a product to a group of pretty regular consumers, those are less likely to work. Mm-hmm. So the copy is really impactful, but I think, you know, I've never personally found in any of my businesses any instance where text only ads of any kind outperform visual ads. It just never happens. And I think that fact is increasing over time. People are having lower attention spans. They're more used to visual media and they're less interested in text media. I think there are a lot of people who feel like you do that they do not want to watch a video. And that's important to know if that's your demographic, that you do not serve them a video because you're losing people off there. So there are certainly like individualized tests that are important to do here. Yep. And that's back to the point of you need to have a strong enough gross profit margin that you can afford to test your digital marketing and make sure that you can profit, even if it's quite expensive at the beginning. You're going to try at the beginning, you kind of have this, you know, right off the ground, you kind of have this instance where like digital marketing can be very expensive at first. You sort of experiment around, you get it figured out. Your price goes way down because like you were saying, your earliest adopters, once you've kind of gotten them honed in, your earliest adopters are the cheapest. And then that only stands to increase over time. Once you've really figured out how to hone in on your demographic and you have a good understanding of your consumer persona and who you're marketing to, you should always expect your customer acquisition cost to go up from there. Hopefully you can keep it even, but it's very rarely going to go down. You have to really hit a good aha moment, certainly by reorganizing a lot of this stuff. You can get your CPAs down significantly. I mean, I've seen people focus on their fundamental stuff and fix some big holes and take their CPAs down to 25% of what they were before. But once you've really got it honed in, you should expect that to go up. So, All right. So, all right. So we want strong purchase intent once we get clicks to the site. And then finally, and this is a place where I see a lot of people mess up. We had a website that was causing lower conversions for quite some time that we couldn't fix the loading time. We want quick action from clicks to the site to conversions. A lot of this is on you, and some of it's on your consumer. Some of it you'll need to know how your consumer likes to experience your site. It impacts your decisions whether they like to live on mobile mostly, whether you see, I mean, you should certainly know where your traffic's coming in. You should also know proportional to the traffic you have coming in, where are people buying? So we have at Overtone, for example, like 8% of our traffic comes to desktop, but about 25% of our conversions come from desktop, because our people who come to desktop have a very, very strong purchase intent. And we see a lot of people save it on their mobile, put it on their desktop, because our product is extremely visual and they like to see more of it at one time. So our website is obviously set up to be mobile first. I think a lot of people have primarily mobile traffic these days, direct to consumer. The way that most people are going to be clicking on your ads is primarily mobile. If you have a primarily mobile set of traffic and conversion and you do not have a mobile first website designed, get on that shit right now. That is like, it's a big project, it's a big undertaking, but that is like absolutely, I mean, you will, if you're running a business without that and you do that, you will just see your shit skyrocket. That's crazy. Hopefully no one here is running on a website that doesn't have like a really strong mobile first design. But what we want to do, statistically speaking, we know for sure that the faster someone converts, the faster someone moves something to the cart on the website, and this is true across direct to consumer, it's certainly true for Overtone, the faster someone moves around your website, the more likely they are to convert. So we want to get them to the site with strong purchase intent, and we want to give them a really fluid, easy experience that lets them quickly go to what they're getting, to what they want, add it to the cart, and check out. So there's a lot of little tactical things that can be included in here. One of the easy ones is mobile first web design, if that makes sense for your demographic. Another one is you want to provide a really quick loading experience. For every 10th of a second that your site takes to load, you are losing people hand over fist. Another one that is like less simple, or less obvious, that a lot of people mess up on. If someone clicks on a product, photo, video, whatever, on Facebook, Instagram, anywhere around the world, do not take them to your homepage. Do not take them to a shop all page. Do not take them to a page that is not the product they were literally looking at. That's another place where people lose so many conversions. If you are selling bikinis and you have this hot pink bikini that looks like this, and it's a photo and it's beautiful and it's wonderful and it's a woman out on a beach and man, I'd love to be in Greece right now. I want that exact bikini. And I click and I end up on this shop all page with all the bikinis and I have to sort through, like nobody's gonna convert through that. So these are more easy tactical things if you run through the eyes of a consumer that hasn't experienced your website before. This seems like simple shit, but all the way through this, you see people losing conversions through this funnel without paying attention to the most simple stuff. People will tinker with their audiences ad nauseum and experiment with all of these extra little shrinky shiny shit. I know my marketing team does it all the time. I have to constantly move them back to the most fundamental stuff. The simplest stuff is what matters.
That's a scent match, like an ad. Like whenever we would have a bad day, I'd be like, I bet the ad isn't scent match. So when you finally have an ad working, if it takes a while, you've matched that fucking landing page exactly to the ad once you have a winner. And what happens is your team will like lose track sometimes, and then they'll do a new ad and they'll send it to this very different color, different image. And then it goes down by half. So you have marriages. Every ad has a marriage landing page. You'll start to testing to generic. Once you have enough traffic to it, you go, hey, this is worth investing in. Then you do the lander to match. It has its cycle. And then you can then do another one. And then maybe a month later, bring back the cycle. So you end up with is a database of like 20 winning scent matches that you rotate.
Yep.
But if you get off, you lose money.
There are certainly people here, including you, who are much better at the tactical pieces of setting up audiences and funnels for digital marketing. I won't pretend to get into that. But the strategic piece of this is like, it's so simple and it's so easy to lose sight of. I think some people also believe, you know, if you're not the digital marketer at your company, if you have a person or a firm doing this, that does not mean that you get to sit back and not be involved. You are setting up your digital marketing team, agency, person, whatever, to fail if you do not have a strong understanding of the strategic direction of this funnel and what you want your communication and flow of your consumer to be all the way through the checkout process. So like you said, a simple, like even if you're not selling products, having a landing page, whether you're selling products or services, having a landing page that echoes the existing ad, something that feels very homogenous, something that feels familiar to them. I mean, we like to think about, my dev team uses this cartoon of a guy trying to drink water from the bottom of a glass. Like, that is the level of simplicity that everything has to be. Take someone who doesn't know how to drink water out of a fucking glass, and right, teach them how to get through our site as quickly as possible and get through to a conversion. And you'll see things. We went from probably an average 2.8% conversion about a year and a half ago through checking out all this fundamental stuff to the point where we are about 2 percentage points higher, 4.7%. So some of this stuff, even if you're thinking about this, even if you have a pretty sophisticated digital strategy, even if you're digital first, mobile first, and even if you have a great organic experience for your consumers on Instagram, Facebook, whatever, I guarantee you, you've got holes that can be patched in this fundamental stuff. And it makes a huge difference, because if you start at the top and fix things, you just get so much more water all the way through.
Yep. Makes total sense.
All right. That's all I got.
All right. We'll open up for questions. This is really good. You're right on the fundamentals. I have a question. So, because it was what you're saying, if you take your firm or your team through these, you can, even if you don't know marketing, you can take people through these four things.
Yeah.
Make them explain what you just asked. So you don't even need to be an expert. And that's the way you can vet a firm, because if you ask them all the way through, what do they do, and make them show you, you can see this. It's not hard to see. So it allows you, even if you don't, I like your tool, because it allows you, even if you don't know a lot of the details, you know what this is.
Yeah, and frankly, I think people get a little nervous around places where they're not the expert. Like, you don't have to be the digital marketing expert to understand the strategic analysis of what your consumer is experiencing, right? You can understand, you can sit, people I think are afraid to say, like, explain to me how this equals this, explain to me how this is turning into this, explain to me what people are seeing here. I think people are too nervous to get into the kind of dumb questions of places where they are not the expert. And that, I think, is one of the biggest mistakes you can make. These fundamental things are really simple. Everyone can align on them. They're easy to, like, look through metaphorically. They apply to every business, and you can use them to understand everything that's happening in your business, even if you don't know how to build an audience, even if you have never been on the Facebook backend interface, even if you've never done any of this yourself.
Yeah, they should be able to show you. You're right, because I'm going to start doing this. Because especially with your firm, you have to outsource a lot of stuff at the beginning.
Yeah.
And if you can take that firm through this and say, no, show me, like, maybe a slideshow, because you don't need to log into Facebook to see this. Show me the ad, you know, for the more focus here. Show me the, you know, intent, and that, have them show you a narrative, and you go, no, that's or they're not thinking that way. Then you know they're not pro. Yep. So you really don't, you know, if you make them present it with these, then they have to do it. I love it.
A lot of people do their agencies a really big disservice too by assuming that they understand kind of the visionary strategy of this. It's not their job to do that. Their job is to be excellent at taking your strategic direction and creating a tactical approach that funnels your consumers through the way you want. You can still create a consumer experience, a consumer story, and you absolutely should be driving things strategically, even if you have no experience in digital marketing yourself. Otherwise, you know, I always say, like, digital marketing firms, if it's not their job to take your vision and turn it into a new vision and then turn that into digital marketing. It's not their job to start from scratch and say, here's a product, figure out how to market it. That's your job. You figure out your consumer persona, you figure out your product market fit, you figure out your pricing, your value propositions, and then you bring that to them and you tell them what you want, and they will create it.
So focus. We're going to get you on value creation, because I don't have enough time to cover that. One hack on the psychology front that I use, because my first company, I published psychologists, so I kind of had the access to kind of the best in the world, and I know what they cost. So when I created my supplement company, I wanted to market to, you know, wealthy females over 45. So I hired the best psychologist in the world. Those were her clients. So she's $600 an hour, right? Knows more about what they think than anybody in the fucking world. I said, I'll give you 5 hours, you know, give me 5 hours of your time where I can ask any questions about their deepest thoughts. So for basically $3,000, which would have cost me market research, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars in market research. So find a psychologist high, you know, that's good, like expensive, and say, I'll pay your therapist rates and just let me interview you about your clients. And then they'll give you the deepest, and I just wrote all the sales letters based on friends' information, and I knew all the words, all the fear, you know, I knew all the stuff. Yeah. So you can get strategy from your shrink without going to them as a client. And then they're much cheaper than marketing consultants, because marketing consultants are full shit.
And they're often much better. Yeah. they, I mean, digital marketing at its best is really benevolent manipulation. That's what you're doing, right?
It's an honor. You need to know who you're
saying. Benevolent.
It's disrespectful not to know what they're going through, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a sign of respect that you know what they're going for. You know, yeah, I mean, it's respecting your audience to know as much about them as possible and what they really think.
Yeah, it's and you get a more authentic, people talk about authenticity with brand feel and all of that. All that is, I think, is really being truly empathetic to your audience. And that's not just like touchy-feely feeling for them or whatever. It can be a lot of that, but empathy is really just being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes. If you cannot understand how to walk in the shoes of your consumer, you're gonna have a really hard time marketing to them.
So Zal has a question. He just wants more tips on consumer persona. Any other tips on how to understand it better besides psychology examples?
Yeah, sure. So I'll try to provide some examples after, but here's how I would basically think about it. Your consumer persona should be your absolute best case person. So I said earlier, it shouldn't be an average person. It shouldn't be someone who represents, it should maybe not even be someone who represents your current demographic, although it can, it depends on where you're at with your demographic. Consumer persona is your best case person. So look at the person who buys the most often, someone who is the easiest to convert, someone who is the least difficult for your customer service, someone who understands your product, really needs it, and has very little in the way of objections around your value prop, your price point, someone who really needs your product, is willing to buy it, wants to pay for it, wants to use it well, wants to talk to their friends about it. This is your perfect person. This is like, if you could idealize your customer, if you could have 100,000 of these people, you would just be crushing it all day long. This is your perfect person. It doesn't need to represent the average. And in fact, it can even exclude a lot of the average of who your demographic is. I think that's where people mess up a lot with persona exercises, is that they feel, oh, if I say my consumer persona is Brittany, 32, master's degree, lives in New York, then I have a lot of people who don't live in New York. I have a lot of people who are over 45. That's not relevant. You can have multiple consumer personas, but the point of this exercise is not necessarily to include all of your average demographic. In fact, in a lot of cases, you're excluding a lot of people. If you think about your consumer demographic as a pyramid, you want the best of the best. You want to take that top 3% chunk and turn that person into a caricature. So who is your absolute best case person, easiest to market to, least complaints, most willing to buy, quickest to purchase, purchasing more often, long lifetime value, et cetera, et cetera. That's your consumer persona. You may have one, you may have five. Most people don't just have one. You can spread this across whatever sections of your demographic, but for each marketing kind of like macro initiative you have, you should have at least one consumer persona that you're going after. And the purpose of this is to be able to say, what would Brittany think about this? You want to create a consumer persona that feels so human that you can say, what does Brittany think about this ad? And it's very easy to say, well, Brittany hates kittens or whatever. I don't know. Like Brittany doesn't like that shit. And that doesn't mean that you don't have people who love kittens in your demographic, but it makes it so much easier for you to strategize at a high level from a marketing perspective. And it also makes it very easy for your tactical boots on the ground marketing people to understand what you're getting at when you can connect through metaphor, right? So a lot of the issues with communication between strategists and tactical types is that they speak in very different languages. One of the best ways to connect those two is through metaphors, and a persona is a great way to do that.
Awesome. That's great. We are on the hour. This is perfect. So I'm going to get you back next on how to communicate value. And that's giant. This is fantastic. So thank you, everybody. And thank you. I know you've got lots to do. You're the general. So we'll get you back. And I appreciate it. And then Natalie will bug you for resources. Really.
Sounds good.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
All right. Cheers.